You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sivasodhi. Most of us are prepared to consider the possibility that there are differences in characteristics of our children. Of course, some of these findings are skewed towards the eldest born in the family, and some skewed to the middle child, and some skewed to the last born. But is there much, are these findings accurate? Do they really matter? Joining us today is Professor Peter Mitchell, the editor of the British Journal of Psychology, and we're talking about raising children in order of birth. Welcome to the show, Professor.
I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
Yes, and welcome back.
Well, thanks very much. And it's great to have the opportunity to speak on this fascinating topic.
It is fascinating indeed. When I was researching, I was thinking to myself, my goodness, you know, I didn't realize all of this. There was so much research done when it comes to, you know, raising children in order of birth. Now, Professor, a lot of it had, a lot of these research and, you know, notes that I actually picked out had to do with IQ.
Yes.
There was a lot of talk about the older children having a higher IQ compared to the rest of the children in the family. Is there any truth to that?
There is some truth in it, actually.
Really?
There is some truth.
Oh, dear.
I can speak as somebody who is the youngest of five brothers.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm sorry about that. Maybe it didn't do my IQ any good. But what we find in research is that the larger the size of the family, the larger the number of siblings, then on average the lower the IQ of all of the siblings, actually, right across the board.
Right.
And it's a small effect, it's a very weak effect, but it's a reliable effect. And if we look at this over large populations, we can see that it is there. It's a systematic effect. And this raises the question of why does that happen? And what exactly do we mean by IQ?
Exactly.
And I think there are two very interesting questions that need to be addressed.
Yes. So what is IQ?
IQ stands for intelligence quotient, and it's supposed to be a measure of our intellectual ability. Mm-hmm. Not just a measure of what we've achieved in our lifetime through going to school, through studying, through reading, not just that, but actually our raw potential.
Mm-hmm.
The tests for IQ were, the first tests were devised over 100 years ago, and they've been refined and developed over the past century. The reason why they were developed was because educators realized that they were going to have to select children. They weren't in the early days, they weren't able to educate all of the children because they had limited resources in those days. And so they realized that they could only educate some children, especially to a higher level of education. And what they wanted to do was to be able to select children who are most likely to benefit from education. And now, they could do this just based on an interview or just based on the impression of the child or talking to the family. But in fairness to those people, they decided that the best way to do that this was by objectively measuring a person's potential intelligence. And in modern IQ tests, there are two parts to the test. There's performance IQ and there's verbal IQ.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, these tests are measuring not just the size of your vocabulary or your ability to use language, but more about your mental flexibility, your mental agility, and your ability to remember information as well. Actually, memory is something that correlates very highly with IQ. And then people started to ask the question of, if this is your raw potential and it's independent of experience, does that mean that it's something that you've inherited, something that's passed on to you through your genes?
Genetically.
And this became quite controversial, actually. There became a big debate on this over the past 50 years because it raised questions of, are the group differences in IQ in terms of the genetic potential of your IQ, or the differences between different nations, different groups? As far as I know, there's no strong evidence that there are differences between different nations. But what I would say is that the evidence seems to be fairly strong in saying that a large part of your performance in an IQ test can be explained by your genetic inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be in the order of around about 70%. There's been a huge amount of research done on this, and it seems to be in the order of 70%. Now, it can't be entirely genetic because, as we just...
70% is a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
But it can't be entirely genetic because if it were entirely genetic, then it wouldn't be influenced by environmental factors mm-hmm. like the size of your family and the birth order. But it is. So there's also an environmental component as well.
Okay.
Now, the people who devised IQ tests have a certain view of what intelligence is. And they think, perhaps mistakenly, and I'll say more about this in a moment, but they think that intelligence is about being able to do logical things, the kind of abilities that you need to do well in mathematics or in various
science,
various schooled subjects. That's what they think intelligence is.
Right. No, I wouldn't agree with that at all, would you?
Well, there is another kind of intelligence.
Yes.
There's another kind of intelligence, and it's social intelligence.
That's right.
It's the ability to connect with other people, to be able to interpret what other people are thinking. You might even call it emotional intelligence.
EQ. Mm-hmm.
Well, you could call it EQ, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, in order to put a perspective on this, perhaps we should think about the way human abilities developed in the first place. I don't mean in terms of a lifetime, I mean in terms of the species of humans. Where does this ability come from?
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people assume that intelligence is something that's perhaps, you know, to do with a technological ability or an ability to use tools. And people have this idea, I think, because we think back to our ancestors of 90 million years ago, the first tool-using humans. These were the first technological humans. They first started to use tools. And humans use tools much better than any other creatures on the earth, and their ability to use tools has developed more and more as society has grown.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of our formidable intellectual ability, a lot of this, I think, is to do with the ability to understand what other people are saying, what other people are trying to communicate, how other people are feeling, what other people are worrying about. And the reason why I think so is because, well, humans have a large brain, a powerful intellect, and they're making all sorts of plans and decisions, like plans on what to do next, plans on who they want as a future partner, plans on where to go and find food. Now, if you can figure out what's inside their mind, you're going to have a great advantage because you don't need to learn all of those things from first-hand experience. You can learn it from another person.
Mm-hmm.
So your ability to learn from another person, which is going to be a great advantage to you, a great advantage to your survival, is going to depend on your ability to connect with and understand other people. So we see what we might see here is social intelligence.
Right, which works pretty much the opposite with IQ when it comes to the family. Now, it's said that, as I mentioned earlier, the older children seem to have a higher IQ compared to the younger ones. But what about social intelligence? Does it work the other way around?
In the case of social intelligence, it is the opposite. What we find is that children who belong to large families are likely to show better ability than those from smaller families in interpreting what other people are thinking.
Right, okay.
So it's quite a surprising finding, particularly children who have older siblings. So not necessarily the firstborn, the secondborn has an advantage, the thirdborn has a bigger advantage, but those children from such families, especially from extended families, who have not just the parents, but the grandmother and aunties and uncles, those children have a great advantage in being able to connect with other people and interpret what's in other people's minds.
Okay, but do we know why the older children have a higher IQ?
In terms of, one question we might ask is all tied up with the socioeconomic situation. And that's something we have to think about. Because if we take a look at large families compared with smaller families, on average, we will see that perhaps larger families are of lower socioeconomic status. They might not be quite as well off. They might not have as good an income. And one might wonder whether those children are somewhat disadvantaged. Maybe they don't have as many learning opportunities in terms of traditional school subjects anyway. Maybe they don't have the same access to learning resources. And perhaps that means that they don't have the best possible development intellectually, at least as far as traditional school subjects are concerned. So researchers have been very keen, therefore, to investigate whether the effect on IQ that's associated with the size of the family is associated with the family socioeconomic status.
Okay.
And the answer to this question is actually that it's not. I mean, on average, you'll find that people from poorer families might not do quite so well on IQ tests for richer families, but the effect of birth order and the size of the family in relation to IQ is independent, nevertheless, of socioeconomic status. So there's another reason, which I'm happy to explain in a moment.
Okay. Before that, I'm just curious. I mean, most of us just have two children, three children today. So what you're saying is the IQ levels of the older children is still higher than those of the younger children?
It is.
Regardless.
Three
children.
Yeah. I'm talking here about population statistics, so it's a small effect. But we find that the children who are firstborn, on average, have a slightly higher IQ than the secondborn over the population. Now, in a particular family, like, for example, in my family, I don't accept that my brothers have a higher IQ than I do.
You poor last born.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Yeah. You mentioned socioeconomic status is one reason. What's the other reason?
Okay. So the explanation that's been offered for this is that this may or may not be true. It's just a theory that's been put forward, but I think it's a theory that rings true, actually. The idea is that the children in the family benefit to a great extent from the input of the parent. Of course they do. So the parent is, in most families, is working hard to help the child to develop. And when the parent has just one child, the firstborn, all of their energy and all of their effort, all of their resources can be channeled into that single child. But then when the parent has more children, then of course this valuable input, this beneficial input, has to be divided over more children. And so the beneficial effect of the parent is diluted across several children. But that's on average. You know, individual families can be different, of course.
Okay. Coming up, we'll find out more about the middle child and the last born on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture, and I'm Mira Sivasodhi. We're talking to Professor Peter Mitchell, the editor of the British Journal of Psychology, and we're talking about raising children in order of birth. If you have a question for him, do text us on 016-201-9000, or you can tweet us on BFM Radio. Now, Professor, how do parents take into account all of this when they're actually bringing up these children?
I'm not sure they do take it into account.
No, we don't. No, as a parent, I can tell you. I mean, in terms of values and everything, I've only got one set of values and one way of bringing up my child. Do I have to alter this according to the order of birth?
I don't think so. I think what's much more important is the issue of how you adapt to the characteristics of the child. Now, each child is going to be born with different characteristics, with a different kind of temperament. And whether they're born first or second or third is, you know, that's just a matter of genetic chance. But genetically, they will have a certain set of characteristics that are going to influence the temperament of this child and various other aspects of personality. And it's, in my opinion, it's most important for the parent to be able to adapt to this. Now, a few years ago, people in research assumed that different parents have different style, and that's all there is to it. But it's not quite so simple, actually. What we find with closer inspection is that a parent with a particular style of parenting will actually change depending on the characteristics and the temperament of the child. So parents might say, well, I've got three children, I treated them all in exactly the same way, but they're all quite different.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Yep.
Well, these three children, of course, are genetically slightly different, and they'll bring different genetic characteristics into life, different temperaments, slightly different personality. Now, the parent thinks they're treating these children all in the same way, mm-hmm. but I think not, actually. I think the way that you treat a placid child, the way the same parent treats a placid child, is somewhat different from the way that same parent treats an excitable child. So when we think about the process, the relationship between the parent and the child, it's a two-way process, actually, and the child, what the child brings to this relationship will in turn impact upon how the parent treats the child.
Okay.
And so that's going to feed into the process, and we're going to see these three children from the same family all developing in different directions.
Okay. Based on the IQ that you just spoke about, the IQ levels and the social interaction, where you said the younger children seem to have better social intelligence, as a parent, do I have to keep this in mind when I actually deal with these children?
I'm not sure whether you do, really, but what I would say is that it's good news as far as children are concerned, mm-hmm. because if you're the firstborn child, you might have certain benefits and advantages in terms of developing the kind of intelligence that's going to help you do well in school. If you're a later-born child, you might have certain advantages and benefits in terms of connecting socially with people. Now, if we think about your success in life, you know, where are you going to go to in life? What's going to be your life achievements? And we look at the people who are most successful in the world. As far as I can gather, it's the people who can connect well with other people, who stand the best chance of really succeeding in the world.
Right. Nothing much to do with IQ level.
I'm sure IQ is very relevant. I'm sure it's relevant.
But just as important now.
You have a great advantage,
yes,
if you can connect well with other people.
Okay. When we often hear of this middle child syndrome. Is it a myth, this whole middle child syndrome?
Well, the truth of the matter is that I don't know so much about that, but I can speak personally. I can give you my personal opinion, which is that parents tend to be somewhat indulgent. Not all parents, but some parents tend to be somewhat indulgent to the youngest child. And I guess the middle child at the start of life was not the middle child. They were the youngest child.
Mm-hmm.
And so the parent was perhaps a little bit indulgent, and the older siblings were very delighted to have this new baby brother or baby sister, and they're a bit indulgent as well. And then it must be quite a shock or quite a challenge for adaptation for this child when the attention is shifted to a later-born baby. It must be quite a challenge for them to accept that they're no longer the focus of everybody's attention.
Okay. And what about the later born child? I mean, it is said that later borns live their lives in the shadow of their eldest. How would you describe the later born child? How would you describe yourself?
Well, you know, I can speak personally about this.
I want to hear all about it because I'm the firstborn.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing you can say is that as a later born child is that you can look up to your siblings, see their achievements, see how well they're doing, and then you set that as your frame of reference. You think, well, could I possibly achieve that? Could I rise to those heights? Well, I'm certainly going to try to.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess one of the great things about being a later born child is you can see what there is there to achieve. You can see what can be achieved by your siblings, and they set a great example.
Okay. And parents tend to overprotect the younger ones. Why is that? And parents seem to have a second, a different set of rules for the younger children. Is there a reason for that?
They do. I'm not sure what the reason is, actually.
Mm.
But I suppose the first child, the parent tends to be a little bit anxious about the first child.
Oh,
you don't
definitely
know if you're doing the right thing as a parent. You're a bit cautious about it. Perhaps you relax a little bit with the second or the third born, and then as you become older and you have your last child, I guess you're very, very grateful that you've managed to have this one extra child. And I guess you as a person have relaxed a little bit more. You're more comfortable with a child. You're more comfortable with child rearing. Maybe a bit more comfortable in your life generally.
Thank you.
And so I guess that's all part of it, actually.
Right. And so what's your takeaway message to parents on raising children according to birth order?
My takeaway message would be, don't worry about what statistics say about the size of the family and the IQ of the child, and don't worry about what the statistics say about birth order and IQ. Don't even worry what research says about how socially connected the child is and birth order. What you should worry about is the characteristics that your child has and how you adapt those particular characteristics, because every child is different. They bring something different into the world. They have a slightly different temperament. It's to do with what they've inherited genetically. And the child needs to adapt to the world, but we as parents also need to adapt to the child's individual characteristics. And I think if we can do a good job of that, then we give our child the best possible chance of thriving in life.
Thank you very much.
It is my pleasure.
Professor Peter Mitchell, the editor of the British Journal of Psychology, talking to us about raising children in order of birth on the Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.